One of the things that doesn't make Liz happy, though, is the wildlife when we go camping. There was a possum one day, terrified. She runs into the tent. But in particular, birds. Birds do not make my wife happy. You'll be walking along. In fact, they make her extremely unhappy. You'll be walking along, and all of a sudden, she'll duck and scream. And you'll turn around, you'll think something awful has happened, but no, it's a bird that's just flown across the other side of the road, but she's like making out as though everything's terrible. But I love Liz. We've been married, I feel like I'm not old enough, but we've been married almost 10 years this October, and it was a really, really happy day. And for our honeymoon, I wanted Liz to be really happy, so what I did, I've told some of you this before, what I did is I decided, let's go to one of those tropical islands in northern Queensland, right? One of the ones that you can walk around in an hour. So, you know, we book it in paradise. You can imagine us on the boat to the island, arm in arm, watching this beautiful island coming towards us. There were dolphins jumping out the bow of the boat. I was saying to myself, good work, Toby, good work. And, you know, we get there, we hop off the boat, grab our luggage, we start walking down the jetty. Across the jetty was on top of this see-through water. You could see right to the bottom. There was incredibly beautifully coloured coral underneath. Out to my left, you could see this reef shark hovering on top of the water, hunting fish. I'm saying, good job, Toby. Liz is going to love this. Anyway, we hop onto the shore, carry our bags across the sand and onto this path, which is kind of encircled by trees. Absolutely paradise. I'm thinking, this is amazing. She's going to love it. You are such a legend, Toby Neal, is what I was thinking. And all of a sudden, I hear Liz scream. I look around. She's on the ground and there's this bird. It's just kind of flown off into the distance. I'm like, Liz, don't be scared. It's just a bird. Hop up. So I get her up. We take five more steps, and I kid you not, Jurassic Park happens. Oh, there's one bird, another bird, another bird. There would have been about 50 to 100 birds that just come flying through this channel of trees, and I start thinking to myself, oh, no, what have I done? We walk around this island, and it seriously is Jurassic Park, But the birds on the island, they're more like Resident Evil. You know those birds, they kind of come down. There was a queue. You'd walk into the dining room. There was a queue of birds waiting there politely for you to open the dining room door for the birds to go in. I got there and I realized this island was full of birds. What have you done? You've taken your wife, who hates birds, to an island full of them. And Liz, she really was furious. Day one, we go into the front office and we asked, is there ever a time these birds aren't here? They're like, no. And they're like, can we get a transfer to another island? They're like, no. And then she was particularly, absolutely furious. She realized I'd been forewarned. You see, the island, it was named after a bird. It was Heron Island. And I had taken my wife, a lover of birds, this island full of them. Here's the thing. Have you ever noticed that happiness can turn to disappointment very, very, very quickly, right? I was this newly married, young Christian man, and you know what I'm talking about, right? And my wife is unhappy. Hallelujah. Yeah, right. Anyway, here's the thing. We all want to be happy, and it only takes a moment's reflection to realize this. We want job satisfaction. Parents say to their kids, my mum used to say this to me all the time, doesn't matter, Toby, what you do when you grow up, so long as you're happy. Right? We call a burger, fries and chips a happy meal. I have no idea. That wouldn't make me happy at McDonald's, but we call it a happy. We call a cheap hour of drinks at a pub a happy meal. Happy hour. We all want to be happy. Blaise Pascal, brilliant French philosopher, mathematician, he said this, and it's in your outline. He said, all men seek happiness. Not just men, but women also. All men seek happiness. This is without exception. Whatever different means they employ, they all tend to this end. The cause of some going to war and others avoiding it is the same desire in both, but attended with different views. So whatever you do in your life, your motivation is always, always to be happy. You're saying, Toby, taking out the rubbish doesn't make me happy. It does. The happiness that you'll get from taking out the rubbish may not be right then, but it is in having a house not full of rats. It's either what will make you happy now or then. But here's the thing, what Pascal recognizes is people seek happiness in different ways. We employ different means of getting there. Some go to war to be happy, others don't go to war to be happy. But same end, everything we do in life is designed, ultimately, we choose to do it to make us happy. Either that's happiness now or in a little bit. So the motive for my wife shopping and me avoiding it is the same desire in both of us, but attended to with different means, right? She seeks happiness in a home that looks like a house on the block. I seek happiness by not going bankrupt. You know, we're both seeking happiness, but different means to that same end. We all seek happiness. But here's the thing, do any of us ever arrive at a kind of forever happiness? I don't think we do, and I don't think we ever find this forever lasting, true, genuine, eternal happiness. We all have hopes and dreams. And you know, when you're a kid, you can't wait for Christmas. You get there, you get what you'd hoped for, and then you start looking forward to something else. We have these hopes and dreams that when I get there, I'll be happy. But when we get there, then we start looking forward to something else. Alexander the Great conquered the known world in his day. And having done so, he sat in his tent. He's reported to have sat in his tent and weep, saying, there are no more worlds left to conquer. You know, we all have dreams. We think, this will make us happy. You know, after gaining what most people could only dream of, Elvis Presley, right? The end of his life, lived in this horrible, drug-induced stupor. And in the end, this is all he could say, I'd rather be unconscious than miserable. We all have dreams. We dream for something that will make us feel and deliver. It promises happiness. But once we get there, what we dream of, that dream is elusive. And we find we actually don't get what was promised. Now, the difficult thing for you is you won't believe me when I tell you this. Because I'm pretty sure I haven't met everyone here, right? But I'm pretty sure everyone here is still chasing. You're still chasing some dream. You haven't reached the top yet. You haven't completely succeeded in life. You're still chasing. But go to the people that have arrived at the top. And they will tell you they're still not happy. And so we fail to find this kind of forever happiness. Sure, there are moments of great excitement and joy. You get a promotion at work, or you fall in love and you get married, or girls, you get a new dress, right? But what the work becomes boring, empty, or enslaving. The ones you love, they let you down, and dresses, they go out of fashion. We search for happiness, we want happiness, and yet we never find a treasure. That's what we're looking for, a treasure which can make us happy. Why is this? Why is it that I desire to be happy and yet find nothing that completely satisfies? I think it's because we're seeking happiness in the wrong way, in the wrong end. Now, this was my favorite, let me explain. This was my favorite toy growing up. Did anyone have one of these? A Tupperware Shapo ball. Tupperware apparently make them, right? This was my favorite toy. I think it had something to do with me becoming an accountant when I grew up, right? Just, you know, putting things in squares, and, you know, it's kind of that mathematical brain. But here's the thing, I think this is a picture of our life. In the center of our life, there is this great and expansive whole, and we're designed to kind of place things in our souls that would bring us meaning, fulfillment, and happiness. Couldn't find the hexagon. Found it at last. But our lives, we look at our lives, and there are some things which really do fit in our life. Health, food, friends, family, holidays, work, the pleasure. Those things really do give us happiness. But there's one shape in the center of our souls which we either ignore or deny, and that shape is God, and we try and just stuff other things into that hole, but nothing seems to fit. You know, G.K. Chesterton was this witty English writer, and he said this: every man who knocks on the door of a brothel is really searching for God. Every man who knocks on the door of the brothel is really searching for God. In other words, you think you're looking for sex, but really, there's this empty abyss at the center of your soul, and you're trying to fill it with sex, but really, you are actually searching for God. He's right. We put things into our lives: money, fame, sex, career, drug taking, relationships, sports, good things and bad things, doesn't matter. We cram them into our souls. It's as though our souls are starved, so starved for something great. And it never, there's this hole in our lives which is never quenched, never filled. And we stuff everything in it. And it doesn't matter how much we put in it, our lives will always be empty, because this hole that I'm talking about is not a small hole in a shape-o ball. It's a giant hole. It's meant to be filled with something giant, and that is God Himself. Only God can fill the hole in our hearts for forever happiness. Now, I discovered that, I think, when I was 19, second year uni. I was walking away from the Christian faith, because I seriously thought that churches were out to ruin people's happiness. And many churches are, right? But I really did think Jesus was against me being happy. And then I stumbled across this verse, one verse. That's all I'm going to preach on tonight. I apologize if you're visiting and you're hoping for more. But one verse which I think is packed with a lot of meaning. And it's very vivid. In this story, Jesus actually says quite the opposite of what I was thinking. Have a look at it in Matthew 13, verse 44. It's there on your outline. Jesus tells this short story. He says, the kingdom of heaven is like treasure. It's like treasure hidden in a field, that when a man found it, he hid it again, then in his joy went and sold all that he had and went and bought that field. Joyfully sold everything he had to get that field. Picture the scene: a guy, his girlfriend, and his mates, they're traveling up to Byron Bay on a road trip. On the way, nature calls, and the guy who's driving steps out of the car, goes into this field, and is taking care of business, when he looks down and he sees something shiny and kind of wet, and he kind of shakes it off. He kind of gets under there, shakes it off, and it's gold. More gold than he could earn in 1,000 lifetimes. What does he do? He covers it up again. He doesn't want anyone getting their hands on it. He jumps in the car, drives into town, gets some mobile reception, and goes on eBay and Gumtree and whatever other online selling program there is, and does 10-minute auctions on everything he owns. He's just put a deposit on his house. He puts that up for sale. The car he's driving, puts that up for sale. His iPhone, his surfboard on the roof, his mountain bikes in the back, his MacBook in the boot, his clothes in his suitcase, everything he owns, He auctions off. He goes down to the bank, withdraws all the money. He goes around to the owner of the field that he was in, and he makes him an offer on that field that he cannot refuse. And that is the story Jesus is telling. And he's telling us two things. First thing he's telling us is that friendship with Jesus is the source. It's the source of forever happiness. And then secondly, friendship with Jesus is worth whatever it costs. So firstly, friendship with Jesus, it's the source. Read it again. The kingdom of heaven, it's like treasure hidden in a field. When a man found it, he hid it again, and then in his joy, he went and sold all that he had and bought that field. Joy! It's joy that motivates the man in the story to sell everything he has. Joy! Jesus says, it's so surprising, Jesus says, joy, happiness should be your prime motivator in your life. I think that's surprising because I think we tend to think, no, God would say doing the right thing, that should be the prime motivator in our life. But no, here it is. Joy is the thing that motivates this man to do an amazing thing. And what is the treasure? It's the kingdom of heaven. What's the kingdom of heaven? It's where Jesus is king. And so who is the man in the story? He's a man who finds the kingdom of heaven. He's a man who finds Jesus as king. He's a man who discovers friendship with Jesus. And so Jesus is saying that when anyone makes Jesus their king and friend, they'll have this source of forever happiness. And strangely enough, as you read on the gospel story, you discover that the death of Jesus, it's the death of Jesus which purchases our forever happiness. We don't usually equate happiness with death. When people die, it doesn't produce happiness for anyone. But in a very strange way, Jesus' death did. That's why we call the day Good Friday, right? On that day, Jesus died to remove everything that stops us from having forever happiness. First thing Jesus died to remove was guilt and shame. You can't have joy. You can't have forever happiness if your life is polluted with bad memories. This is the reason that victims of rape often struggle to enjoy life. Victims of crime. Victims say that the horrible experience makes you feel dirty and that it just ruins your life. A bad memory, it pollutes life and it saps the joy out of your soul. And so do all sins committed against you. And there have been sins committed against you. And Jesus died to cleanse you, the Bible says, to cleanse you from all the sin and shame that pollutes your life. But it's not just the sins committed against us that make us unhappy. It's also the sins committed by us that pollute our memory and make us unhappy. And this is the reason why also those who have committed a crime, who are sorry, they still struggle to enjoy life. The guilt attached to what they've done, it haunts them. And we all experience guilt. You don't have to be a lawbreaker to experience guilt. But Jesus says that he came to die to take away sin and guilt and to cleanse us of shame. We all know what Lady Beth meant when she said, "Out, damned spot, out, I say," speaking about the blood guilt on her hands. And we understand what she's talking about, not just rationally, theoretically. We understand it experientially because we've had the same kind of stuff in our soul. And this is why Shakespeare is still watched and read today. He was onto something. But in Jesus, you can find forever happiness because he deals with our guilt and shame by offering us cleansing and forgiveness. Second barrier to forever happiness is death. No matter how enjoyable life is, death always, always gate crashes the party. I can't remember the last guy. I remember talking to him, I just don't remember who it was, but I meet so many people who say that life is all about the journey and not about the destination. I want to have a great journey. Jesus says he's promising a great journey, joy for the journey. But unless you have certainty about the destination, you cannot enjoy the journey. You cannot experience the exhilarating free fall of skydiving. You will not enjoy the exhilarating experience of free falling from 13,000 feet if you don't have a parachute on your back. If there is no parachute, that isn't an enjoyable, pleasant, happy journey. It's a terrifying, awful journey. And so if you don't have a parachute on, no matter how fun the free fall experience is, it won't lead to happiness. And so the second barrier to forever happiness is whether you like to admit it or not. Whether you're gutsy enough to peel back the reality that life is short, death actually does come and spoil the party. What is there to enjoy life if it will be soon over? In order to have forever happiness, Jesus must remove the fear of death. And by that, I don't just mean the event of dying, but what comes after that, because it's an obstacle to forever happiness. You know, a couple of years ago, when one of the times I'd given this talk, I was out in Narellan speaking to people about spirituality, and I met a guy who had an awful life. He told me that 4 years prior, his daughter, who had two children, was having some troubles with her boyfriend. And at the time, she'd slipped into depression, and one night when he and his wife were looking after her, they couldn't find her anywhere, and his wife walked outside and discovered her body dead. She'd committed suicide. And as he was telling this story, I was struggling to listen to him. And then he goes on to say that on that same night, his wife was so upset in discovering his daughter that she made an attempt on her life that same night. And so he spends the night of his daughter's suicide in hospital by the bedside of his wife, who had just tried the same thing. And he's telling me, he's crying, he's this big macho Australian out in the front garden doing the gardening, drinking beer. We're having this chat and he's in tears as he's talking to me. He's saying the last 4 years of life had been so painful, the memory of his daughter so powerful, and his grief so immense, it's just gutted his life. And after listening to him talk about our broken world, what hope did I have to offer? I turned to 1 Thessalonians 4. We believe that Jesus died and rose again, and so we believe that God will bring with Jesus those who have fallen asleep in him. I offered him the hope of the gospel, which is Jesus dying and rising so that we would too. That's the hope of the gospel. Now, how do we get that? Spoken about it happened in his death, and this is kind of the part in the sermon where I'm kind of supposed to start yelling about fire and brimstone and hell and heaven, but I'm not going to do that for you tonight, because if you're not a Christian, and if you're not, I'm so glad you're here, but if you're not a Christian, I don't want you to fear hell and that to motivate you to somehow become a Christian. Actually, I don't think a Christian is someone who just fears hell. I want you to become a Christian because you realize that you will become happy if you find friendship with Jesus. Now, there is an obstacle to your happiness, and that is death and what comes afterwards. But I don't want to fear you You know, I don't want you to become a Christian out of fear, but out of love. And so what I want you to know is that Jesus is that sure, hell is real. And Jesus speaks more about hell. He speaks more about hell than anyone else in the Bible, which is surprising because he was the most loving man ever to live. But Jesus, the Bible's message is that Jesus died so that you wouldn't have to go there. He died, he took your punishment so that you wouldn't have to go to hell. Let me give you an illustration to help you understand this. Do you remember when you were a child and you'd take a magnifying glass, right? I don't think I ever did this as a child, but I can imagine, I've seen kids doing this. Take a magnifying glass, and what does a magnifying glass do? It centers light onto a point, or you can magnify stuff, but you can also center kind of light, the sun's rays, into a point, and you can use that to burn leaves, burn a shed, burn kind of patterns on a fence, or burn your sister if you've got one, right? But what is that? You see, you can take a magnifying glass and you can bend the rays of the sun into such a sharp point of intensity that the power generated can burn things. All right, and I wonder if you could do this now. I want you to imagine a giant magnifying glass, the size of this room, a giant magnifying glass, the size of this building, and through it passes not the rays of the sun, but the punishment of God for all the wrongdoing in the world. The things you have done and the things others have done to you, all the punishment for all the wrongdoing. And if I might say so, I want you to realize that's a great thing. That God would punish wrongdoing. It means that the way I treat you matters to God. It means the way you treat me matters to God. It means the way we treat the world deeply matters to God if God's storing up punishment for it. It matters to God. He doesn't just sit back in his chair and say, it doesn't matter. He's angry. He is angry at wrongdoing, and it's a wonderful thing he is. Otherwise, we would look back at those 32 children who died. Should I stop or keep going? Otherwise, we'd look back on all those 32 kids who died in Connecticut last year and we'd just have to shrug our shoulders and say, 32 people dead doesn't really matter. It does matter. It matters to God, and that's a good thing. And so I want you to imagine that God actually cares about that stuff and he's angry about that. Angry at all the wrongdoing in the world, all the hatred, the lies, the jealousy, the envy, the murder, the gossip, the manipulation, everything. All the times we've treasured food, family, and friends more than we've treasured him. And all of that, all of it passed down through this giant magnifying glass onto one man at one point in history with such terrible power that man would cry out as he's on the cross dying for those things, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why did he say that? If it wasn't the accumulative sins of the whole world and God's righteous anger directed at it passed through this giant magnifying glass on him. He's dying in my place for my wrongdoing. Which is why Christians love him. And that's why we love him. Do you see why friendship with the King is such a source of joy? It's because Jesus died my death. He experienced my punishment for my sins, which is my death. He experienced that for me so that when I die, I wouldn't stay dead. I wouldn't have the dread of hell hanging over me, but I'd have the hope of life eternal at God's side. On the cross, Jesus was punished for my sin so that I could be forgiven and so that his blood could cleanse me of my bad memories, my guilt and shame. It removes it all so that I can be free and happy, the fear of death no longer haunting me. Jesus died to remove every bad thing which stands in our way from forever happiness. He takes it all away, guilt and shame and the fear of death. But his death, it doesn't just take away what is stopping us from being happy. His death also gives us what we need to make us happy. Victor Hugo, the man who wrote Les Miserables, right? Incredibly perceptive man. He said this, life's greatest happiness is to be convinced that we are loved. Life's greatest happiness is to be convinced that we are loved. That is what you see on the cross as you see Jesus dying for you. Your sins on his shoulders, bearing God's righteous judgment so that you wouldn't face it. Now, there's this story recounted by Billy Graham of a man who had been put in prison for 8 years, and the week before his release, he wrote a letter to his wife and children. He writes, "I'm getting paroled next week, and I've been here almost 8 years. I know you don't want me probably to come home, but maybe you would have some love left in your heart, and I'm going to be on the 10:12 a.m. bus. I'll be passing by the house, and if you will welcome me, I wonder if you'd put a yellow flag on the tree outside our house or a yellow ribbon somewhere outside, and then I'll know you'll receive me. If not, I'll just pass on by because I know how ashamed you must be for having me in prison." So on his way home, on the bus, it stops at a university. He's on the way home, and on hops the bus, a group of uni students, and before long they get to talking with this man, and he told them his story, and he told them this letter that he had written to his wife and his kids, and soon this nervous anticipation fills the bus as it nears the home. Would there be yellow ribbons? Would there be a yellow ribbon on the tree outside the home or a yellow flag, or would the trees be bare? And when the bus turned the corner and as they stared down the street 500 meters to their home, there was nothing but yellow lining their streets. All the trees of the streets were covered in yellow flags and yellow ribbons. As the bus stopped, the man hurried off and fell into the arms of his wife and children to the wild, wild, joyful applause of the students. You know, this afternoon, all of heaven has those yellow sheets out, waving for you to come home, saying all is right. Your shame, it's been cleansed. Your guilt has been paid for. Death is no longer your destiny. The yellow sheets are out inviting you to come home. That is why friendship with Jesus is the source of forever happiness. If you're a Christian and you're burnt out, you're struggling as a Christian, you need to get that into your soul. I know you're here tonight and you're struggling. You need to cast your mind back. Cast your eyes on him as he dies on the cross for your sins. You don't move on from the cross as a Christian and let it sink into your soul and let the joy well up. Well, secondly, friendship with Jesus is the source of forever happiness. It goes to show that it's also worth giving up everything for. And this point will be much shorter. It's worth whatever it costs you. If it's the source of lasting happiness, you'd do anything for it. You might have to dig before you find it. You might have to look before you see it. You might even have to give up everything to get it. But being where God is, being in his kingdom, being friends with the King is more important this year for you than anything else that will happen in your life this year. The guy in the story, he had to sell everything he had to buy the field. He isn't at all fazed by what he had to give up. Some of you are fazed by what you'd have to give up to become a Christian. He's not at all fazed because he's got his eyes on the treasure. He's like, this treasure is more valuable than all those other things I've got in my life. His possessions, they slip easily from his hand because he understands that friendship with Jesus, it's just so damn worth it. It costs him his car, his surfboard, his MacBook, his house, everything. How valuable is God's love in your life? Is it so valuable that if you had to, Jesus isn't even asking us to do this, but is it that valuable that you would part with everything you had to take hold of it? Jesus saying, yes, it's worth it. It really is worth it. 2 years ago, I was on a surf trip in Indonesia and I visited this Buddhist temple. And there are all these monkeys there and they steal cameras and stuff like that. And there I learnt how to catch a monkey. I think I've told you this before as well. How to catch a monkey. This is what they say, how to catch a monkey. You get a coconut, drill a hole in the top, put a peanut inside and tie the coconut to a chain somewhere so that the coconut can't go. The monkey smells the peanut, scampers over to it, puts his hand inside the peanut, inside the coconut, takes hold of the peanut, takes hold of the peanut and tries to yank his hand out, but he can't get it out. You know, the one thing a monkey will not do is let go of the peanut to get his hand out. And so he's trapped and caught. You know, we are like that, holding on to drink and sex and ambition, and these things are as pathetic as peanuts when infinite joy is offered to you by Jesus. Now, what is it that you treasure more than Jesus? Is your peanut the approval of your friends and family? You just couldn't come home and tell them you've become a Christian. If so, Jesus says, give it up. You'll be free. You know, when you treasure Jesus more than anything else, your girlfriend may think you're barking mad. Your friends will mock you when you see, you know, you selling all your possessions for it. That's going to happen because you found something you value more than the things they value. Or is your peanut your career, which you make compromises spiritually for? Is your peanut drinking games with work friends, or just the materialism, the desire to have more stuff, or a sexual relationship? Jesus is saying, give up those things which you think will make you happy, and trust me when I say that pleasures are at my hand for you forevermore. Tonight, Jesus is offering us all forever happiness for the kingdom of heaven. It's like a treasure, isn't it? Hidden in a field that when a man found it, he went and sold all that he had to buy that field. My question is, what is your treasure? Someone's going to audit your life, come into your life. What are they going to say? This is the thing that you love most of all. This is the thing that you find security in, satisfaction in. Someone audited your life. What would they say your treasure is? What would your friends say your treasure is? The reality is that whatever it is, it will require you to die for it. Make work your treasure and you will sacrifice your life. You make work your treasure, you will sacrifice your life working 90-hour weeks. You'll sacrifice relationships, your health, even your integrity if work is that treasure that you're hoping to fill the empty void in your soul. Make pleasure your treasure, and you will sacrifice your life's mission for triviality. And you'll grow old and selfish and just seedy, leaving a trail of broken relationships in your wake. The best way to work out what your treasure is to see what is the most valuable thing in your life. And could you part with it if you needed to? Jesus said, where your treasure is, that's where your heart will be also. A place where your heart really rests, it's determined by how you spend your money, how you spend your time, where you pour your creative energy into it. That's your treasure. That's your treasure. Anything your soul treasures, it will require you to pay an exorbitant price for it. Whatever your treasure is, you'll have to sacrifice your life for every treasure, except for Jesus, will insist that you have to die to purchase it. You know, God had a treasure too, of course. A treasure that was lost, wasn't it? Long, long ago, his treasure was lost. What was God's treasure? His most important thing, the thing God loved best of all in the world. It's his children. What did it cost him to find that treasure? It cost him everything. You know, Jesus is the only treasure who will not require you to sacrifice your life for him. He's the only treasure who will sacrifice his own life for you. Where is it that you're looking for happiness, for forever happiness? Come to Jesus. He is offering it to you today. Jesus dies for us because we are his most precious treasure, which he had lost. Now, I know there are some of you here tonight that perhaps you're not fully convinced yet that Jesus is the source of forever happiness. I'm not asking you to make a commitment tonight. All I'm saying is this year, I'm saying to you, this will be the most important thing you investigate this year. And so I'm asking you, will you give some time this year to investigating it? If your diary's like mine, you're always finding that the urgent is always crowding out the important. This is deeply important. Your forever happiness is being offered to you right now. Don't let the urgent crowd out this important thing. Check out Jesus. Get to know him. If you're not ready to make the commitment, don't. But don't just ignore his offer today. There's a course on the back sheet, the second last page of the outline called Christianity Explored. We've had a couple of people do it at the end of last year. They found it so helpful. So helpful. Why don't you come along to this? We'll be starting one, not this week, but next week. Tell me on the comment cards which came in your outline. Don't just pass this opportunity by, but keep checking him out. One of the biggest dangers for you tonight is to fail to realize there's a treasure on offer. So check it out. But there are some of you here tonight, you're convinced. You've been hanging around Vine Church for quite a while now, and you are convinced. You know Jesus is a treasure, and tonight I want to give you the opportunity of having Jesus become your treasure. I want to invite you to pray a short prayer with me. It's very simple. I'm going to say three things to God. Here's what I'll say. I'll just say, sorry, God, that I haven't treasured you as I should have. I'm going to say, thanks, that you love me and you sent Jesus to die for me. And thirdly, I want you to pray, please help me to make you and not other things my treasure every day. Will you, if you're ready for this, you don't want to pass by this gift, if you're ready for this, why don't you join me in prayer now? I'm going to ask everyone to join me as you close your eyes. Dear God, sorry that I haven't treasured you as I should have. Thanks that you love me and you sent Jesus to die for me. Please help me to make you my treasure every day. Amen. Now, if you prayed those words and meant them, you can be sure that God heard you. And those yellow sheets are being waved in heaven right now. You're accepted by the King of Heaven. You've become one of his friends. And I'm very, very glad about that. So I'd love it if you could come and tell me that.